Audio from the March 2011 International Women's Day Tour of Dublin.
Okay, can everybody hear me? I realise that it's a bit silly asking that question. We're here at the Department of Justice, Equality and Law Reform. One of the big struggles of the Irish feminist movement over the last 100 years has been amending our laws to ensure the equal status of women. Now, there was a large political involvement of women during the nationalist movement of the late 1800s and early 1900s. Women played a huge role in the 1916 Rising, the Civil War, and in the Ladies' Land League. But things went a little bit quiet on the women's political activism front then, until the 1970s, with the advent of the Irish Women's Liberation Movement. The Irish Women's Liberation Movement aimed to change Irish laws to ensure equality for women. In their manifesto, Change Not Chains, they demanded reproductive justice and also equal work for equal pay and equal status. They announced this manifesto on the Late Late Show in 1972, demanding that the Equal Pay Act be brought in so that women receive equal pay for equal work. They demanded that the marriage bar be overturned. At the time, any woman who had a civil service job, so worked in civil service, was a teacher, anything like that, had to give up her job upon getting married. And they also demanded that women have access to contraception and access to information on their sexual health. Now, there was such a rowdy bunch that the Taoiseach of the time, Garrett Fitzgerald, arrived down to RTE to confront the women in the hope that he could negotiate with them and maybe sort them out and stop all the argy-bargy. Didn't work, needless to say, and I'm told it descended into a shouting match out in Mount Marion with the women refusing to move. Over the next 5 years, the Irish Women's Liberation Movement fought a long and hard campaign to reform some of the laws relating to women in Ireland. One of the main things they objected to was the Irish Constitution, which says that a woman, by economic necessity, shouldn't be forced to work outside the home. With a number of women asking the question, does that mean that the state should pay us to stay at home? They also wanted to make sure that women got equal pay for equal work. Now, as much as they struggled and published magazines, they staged protests. Eventually, it was when Ireland joined the European Union that we ended up getting equal pay and equal rights. In 1973, we had the Equal Pay for Equal Work Act, and in 1977, we had the Equal Rights to Employment Act, and also the overturning of the marriage bar. So, while these women worked hard and fought hard, it's probably important to say that it was met largely with resistance from Dáil Éireann, possibly because of the low levels of women's political representation. And these women eventually got what they were asking for, but because of European diktat, not because of, I suppose, a shift in Irish society. So we're going to move on now, and we're going to move a little bit further down the road towards Hume Street to talk about another strand of the Irish Women Liberation Movement's work, which was reproductive justice. In the early part of the last century, Ireland achieved its independence from the UK. And we needed a new national identity, I suppose. And the national identity of Irishness became synonymous with that of Catholicism. So the Catholic Church were playing an absolutely huge role in our society. They ran our hospitals, ran our schools, in lots of ways ran our government. Because the Catholic Church had a very special place in our constitution. And women's sexuality was very much repressed. Women didn't end up in crisis pregnancy, and when they did, we squirreled them away and scuttled them away. One woman who capitalised on this was a very interesting Dublin figure called Mamie Cadden. Mamie Cadden was born in America in 1895 and moved back with her family when she was 6 years old to Mayo. She trained as a midwife in the Rotunda, but very soon realising that she could make her money elsewhere and that her services were required, set up what was known as a lying-in hospital in Rathmines. She raised the capital herself and used to have, I suppose, two parallel strands of business. The first was for wealthy women. They used to be able to spend the last month or two of their confinement in luxury in Rathmines, where she would look after them. The other strand of her business was for women who found themselves in trouble, who found themselves pregnant and not in a particularly suitable situation. Mamie Cadden, word on the street was the way to solve your problems. And she used to do two things. She used to arrange off-the-books adoptions, so for what would have been a hefty fee for the women who came to her, she would have arranged an adoption with a wealthy family. The other thing she used to do is she used to provide abortions to women using means such as inserting laminaria tentis, which is like an expanding type of seaweed, or using Jay's fluid to terminate pregnancies in the early months. Mamie Cadden got away with this for a number of years and became quite a well-known figure around Dublin. In the Ireland of the 40s and 50s, it was unusual to see a woman. She had this amazing blonde hair and she used to drive around in her own sports car, and everyone would know who she was with her own business. Eventually, though, it all rather came a cropper, and she was convicted of leaving a newborn baby by the road in Meath and was sentenced to a year's hard labour. Her lying-in hospital in Rathmines was closed, and Dublin was without a fixer for women in trouble for a period of a year. When she got out, Mamie was, I suppose, she was struck off the register as a midwife, so she was no longer delivering babies. But it didn't stop her providing other services. So in a dingy one-room flat in Hume Street, just down here, women in trouble used to come to her for abortions. She also used to offer solutions for things like head lice and STDs as well. This carried on for a number of years until Mamie was arrested when a young woman, young pregnant girl in 1945, who had a failed abortion, said that it was Cadden who had helped her. There wasn't enough evidence to convict Mamie at the time, but it did drive her a little bit further underground. But she kept working until later on that year, a young woman called Helen O'Reilly was found dead on the corner, just over here, of an air embolus. Allegedly because Mamie Cadden had injected Jay's fluid into her uterus to terminate a 5-month-long pregnancy. Mamie was the last woman sentenced to hang in Ireland, although her sentence was eventually commuted to life in prison. She was sentenced to a life of hard labour in Mountjoy, but after only a year of serving that sentence, legend has it that she went mad and died 2 years later of a heart attack in the Central Mental Hospital. Now, the Ireland that Mamie left behind when she died, it was quite similar to the one that had been there when she arrived. There was no contraception, there was certainly no abortion, and women who found themselves in trouble would often end up in places like the Magdalen Laundries, where nobody would know the situation they were in and their babies would be taken away from them. Many of the women who ended up in the Magdalen Laundries, despite having committed no crime, never got out again. And today, there are still women under the care of the Magdalen Laundries of Cahill Brewer Street in Dublin. Now, as I said before, reproductive rights became a flashpoint for the feminist movement in the 1970s. Because women couldn't access contraceptives here, the Irish Women's Liberation Movement decided that something needed to be done. So one Saturday afternoon, contraceptives by this time had been legalised in the UK and in the North. So there had been a steady flow of contraceptives coming privately in from the UK and down from the North. But the women of the Irish Women Liberation Movement decided that this wasn't enough, and it was a bit ridiculous that this backstreet trade was going on and the government were ignoring it. So they all, one morning, got on the train, went up to Belfast. Now, they ostensibly purchased the pill and condoms, but as it happened, they weren't actually able to get their hands on any. So they came down with empty boxes and packets of fake pills back into Houston Station and dared the customs officers to seize them. The poor customs officers, who were men in their early 20s, were absolutely mortified by this and wouldn't seize the contraceptives. And the women had created quite a splash. And this proved kind of a flashpoint, I suppose, for making contraceptives available in Ireland without prescription. Now, the group then split into a number of other groups. The law at the time said that you couldn't sell contraceptives in Ireland, but there was no law against giving them away. So CAP, the Contraceptive Action Programme, decided to start giving contraceptives away for a small donation at a small stand on O'Connell Street outside the GPO, among other places. They also did things like stocked condom machines in pubs and posted condoms to women outside of Dublin. It wasn't until a young senator called Mary Robinson put several bills through the door to legalise contraception that I suppose it became a discussion point for our national legislators, and eventually contraceptives were made available on prescription only to married couples. This continued for a number of years, and I suppose the last flashpoint was in the early 90s when the Irish Family Planning Association were fined the princely sum of £500 for selling condoms in the Virgin Megastore. Today we are very lucky, condoms are freely available in this country, but abortion is an issue that hasn't gone away. In the early 1980s, Ireland had just joined the EU, and right-wing Catholic groups like the Order of the Knights of Columbanus, whose headquarters are again just down here on Ely Place, just at the end of Hume Street. They played a huge role in Irish society. They specifically arranged for their members to have high-ranking positions in the civil service, in the education system, in the health system, to ensure that their right-wing restrictive values of denying women their sexuality and reproductive rights were enforced. And they began to push in the early 80s. There was a concern, I suppose, that the European liberal values would be forced on Ireland, just as equal rights for pay and equal rights in work had been forced upon us. They feared that a liberal abortion legislation would be pushed on us as well. The early 80s in Ireland were a time of huge political instability. Governments were coming and going as fast as the weather changed. And the hugely, hugely powerful pro-life amendment campaign, who grew from organisations like the Knights of Columbanus, were pushing all of the successive governments to have what they described as a pro-life amendment. Simmer down. The pro-life amendment. This was the 8th amendment to the Irish Constitution and was voted in by a small majority in 1982. And what this amendment did was it placed the right to life of the mother, it gave the fetus, the unborn, the right to life similar to that of the mother. So it balanced those rights. Essentially banning abortion in the Constitution, even though it had still been banned from 1861, the original abortion legislation that Mamie Caden was convicted under all those years previously. So things weren't really moving on in a more liberalised direction, shall we say. One of the very disturbing offshoots of that legislation was in the late 80s and early 90s, the pro-life amendment campaign and an organisation called SPUC, the Society for the Prevention of Unborn Children, thought, Protection of Unborn Children. If we have a constitutional ban on abortion, does that mean that we have a constitutional ban on abortion information? And so they took a number of organisations to court. including Open Door Counselling and the Well Woman Centre, who have been providing women with the names and phone numbers of abortion clinics in the UK. This had a number of other very disturbing consequences. Issues of Marie Claire were having pages torn out of them because they had ads for Mary Stopes. There was whole editions of The Guardian that never made it to Dublin because they mentioned abortion. And books such as Our Bodies, Ourselves are being taken out of libraries. There was a complete clampdown on information. Spook won their case in the Supreme Court, and a number of students from Trinity College nearly ended up in prison. Ivana Bacic, current Trinity senator, tells the story of packing her bags to go to prison because she refused to stop handing out abortion information. Now, all of this debate was to continue, but it was to change suddenly in 1992 when a phone call was made from London by the parents of a 13-year-old girl who'd been raped by a neighbour. This girl, her parents wanted to know, they travelled to the UK so the girl could access an abortion after she'd found herself pregnant following the rape, and they wanted to know, could they use the products of the abortion to as genetic evidence against her rapist? And rather than having compassion for this girl and the situation she found herself in, the Attorney General immediately ordered her to come back to Ireland, and she was ordered to remain in the country for 9 months so that she couldn't access an abortion. And this proved to be a flashpoint in the struggle for reproductive rights. All of a sudden, there were hundreds of thousands of people marching on O'Connell Street against what they saw as this appalling decision. People who didn't really think about abortion or felt, well, not really here, we're not really that interested in it, saw the situation this woman had found herself in and went, this is horrific, and had marched to speak for her. The Supreme Court overturned the High Court ruling, and she was allowed to travel. That which is known as the X case ruling, the Supreme Court said that if a woman's life is in jeopardy because of the threat of suicide, she did have a right to access an abortion. This young woman had a miscarriage before she could act on this advice, but what it did do was it triggered a referendum. Later in 1992, there were three referenda: the right to travel, the right to information, and what was known as the substantive issue, which is where the government wanted us to roll back the X case to say that suicide wasn't a grounds for an abortion. Now, after the 1992 referendum, Irish women now have the right to leave the country when they're pregnant and the right to information on abortion. But they very clearly said, we will not roll back the X case. Now, we're 20 years later now, nearly. We still haven't got legislation for X. And this year, three women, A, B and C, took a case to the European Court of Human Rights, basically saying, this is ridiculous. We're 20 years on. Our constitution and our laws say that we can access abortion if our lives are in jeopardy, but there's no legal remedy for this. There's no information for a doctor to say when they can do it and when they can't, what's a threat to life. So essentially they can't access these services. So the European Court of Human Rights ruled earlier on this year that Ireland has to basically get their ducks in a row. We have to either legislate for X or have another referendum. And this is the situation we find ourselves now. We have a new government, and it's very important that we keep up the pressure so that our ducks are put back in a row and that this important legislation is brought through. Okay, we are going down towards the National Gallery now to talk about women in the arts. Thank you.
This audio was recorded on the March 2011 International Women's Day Walking Tour of Dublin. The tour was organised by Choice Ireland and RAG. For more information, see article 99130 on indymedia.ie.